And you're listening to Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. Write to us, Taylor at CIUT.fm. And just remind you, on April the 10th at Betts Attune, John Philpott and myself, Phil Taylor, we're going to be talking about the United Nations. And boy, is there is tumult, to put it mildly, on the front of international law, as it's often referred to, which is a wonderful idea. When you don't have it, you have really ugly things happen. And so John Philpott has edited a great book called Justice Belied. He'll be talking about that book, which deals with the problem of establishing international courts, particularly when the principal state in the world, as so it tells us, the exceptional state, doesn't belong to any of these international institutions, but doesn't mind running them. So that's a problem. We're going to address that Betts Attune at 7:30 on April the 10th, which is a Friday, and we're joined by Stephen Gallins. Are you there, Stephen?
Yes. Hello, Phil.
How are you doing? My apologies, but we're really glad to be talking to you. It's gallins.wordpress.com, and you have done a public service. You have made available to your readers a long interview with the president of Syria, Mr. Assad. Well, first of all, why did you think that was something that you wanted to do? Why did you choose to do that?
Well, I've chosen to do that because I find that Assad is a very articulate and cogent spokesperson for the Syrian government, that his points are, you know, they're impeccably, I mean, his logic is impeccable.
He has a reputation as a serious intellectual, doesn't he?
He does, and
it's kind of refreshing.
It is refreshing, and it's a lot more intelligent than the kind of superficial coverage that you'll read in the Western press. Mm-hmm. And he makes some very compelling points about why it is that the United States and Western governments are opposed to his government and his rule in Syria. Mm-hmm. And he points out that the reason they're opposed is because Western governments are interested in what he calls puppet states or client states. And in this particular interview, which was with the Russian media, he made a point of pointing out that there's an interesting relationship between the United States and Russia, which is that even the United States would even like to regard Russia as a puppet state, or certainly like to maneuver it into that position. And if they believe that they can make Russia a puppet state, then certainly they believe they could make Syria a puppet state too, Syria being very small and very weak. Mm-hmm. And he points out the reasons why the United States is opposed to Syria, essentially because Syria refuses to carry out a U.S. or Western agenda in its country.
Yes, and by the way, he touches on a very sensitive thing, which is a favorite topic of the world, talking about status of the Palestinians and Israel and nuclear weapons, all these things. He says his country got in trouble because they refused to be part of any agreements that didn't include a settlement of the Palestinian issue. Is that right?
Yes, and he said that an ultimatum was presented to him by the United States that you need to accept Israel's annexation of the Golan Heights, which is Syrian territory. You need to accept the Zionist conquest of Palestine. You need to renounce your alliance with Iran. You need to end support to groups resisting Israeli aggression, and you need to open your markets. His argument is these things are hardly, they don't comport with the interests of Syria, so these are ultimata we rejected. And because we rejected them, that's the reason why we face the hostility of the United States and the Western world.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Stephen Gallins, gallins.wordpress.com. He uses this language that the U.S., he says, does not accept the idea of a partner. And by the way, it's built into the President of the United States, who is somewhat less articulate, in my opinion, than is President Assad, says he believes in every fiber of his being in American exceptionalism, which is an You know, when you're trying to deal with a state whose leader says that at West Point, that's a dangerous state to be trying to come to any agreements with.
Well, yes, it's a state that dictates and doesn't seek partners. Alliance states are puppets, as Assad says.
Now, President Assad had something else really I found interesting. I want to get your thoughts on. They said there are these airstrikes that are going on by the U.S. against ISIS, and they wanted his, I guess, to see, well, are you grateful or do you think that's good? He said those airstrikes really don't amount to much. It raised an interesting point or thought that it seems to be maybe an exercise in overflight, in controlling airspace. He says they're not really, if you count the number of missions, they don't really amount to anything.
Yeah, so his argument is that, they don't amount to much of anything and that it's really not a serious fight against ISIS. Because he pointed out that the Syrian Air Force, which is very small compared to the coalition Air Force, carries out far more attacks on a daily basis than the coalition group does.
Mm-hmm.
And he also points out that, you know, ISIS is expanding. That how long has this war against ISIS or attempt to degrade it been going on? And what are the accomplishments that the coalition can point to, except perhaps, the withdrawal of ISIS forces from Kobani.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise...
there's some evidence that they might actually be getting in the way of dealing with ISIS. In the case of Tikrit, I don't know if you've been following closely, I assume that these things fit together. After it was indicated that the militias and the Iraqi army were beginning to prevail over ISIS and driving them out of Tikrit, suddenly the U.S. began to bomb Tikrit.
Mm-hmm.
And I want your thoughts about it. Is it, who directs the bombing? I mean, you can't have military, it doesn't make sense. If one man is in, one state is in control of the artillery and the other guy's in charge of the troops, that's not going to work. Because the artillery guy can choose to stop firing or begin firing whenever he feels like it.
Yeah. I mean, you need some kind of coordination between the air power and people on the ground. And this is a point that Assad had made earlier as well, to challenge the idea that the U.S. forces and Western forces are really serious about degrading ISIS. Saying if they're really serious about that, then there'd be coordination of ground forces and air force. And the only way you could do that in Syria is coordinating with the only force on the ground that's opposing ISIS, and that's the Syrian army, which the United States and Western powers are not interested in doing.
Mm-hmm.
I think we'd have to be rather naive to suppose that the United States still isn't willing to use ISIS to attack and bring down the Syrian government. They may not want ISIS to continue to expand in Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sure they'd be very happy to allow ISIS to do as much damage as possible within Syria.
Well, we have reached that vulgar point, haven't we? I mean, with Mr. Friedman in the New York Times broadly speculated, maybe we should be arming ISIS in certain places. I guess let's talk Yemen. ISIS is against the government, against the revolutionary forces, I guess we could call them, in Yemen at the moment. ISIS is all in favor of Saudi Arabia's attack there. So all this language about wars on terror, et cetera, just evaporates. It seems to be, you get up in the morning and pick a partner.
Yes. Just to change the subject slightly, I mean, Yemen is a very interesting case with respect to Syria. It's an interesting to contrast the two. And the rulers in Yemen, who are Saleh previously, who was then succeeded by Hadi, and then to look at them versus Assad, because these two guys were U.S. puppets. They were pursuing a U.S. agenda in their country, and that's one of the reasons that they're no longer where they are. And that's one of the reasons for the uprising that's happened in Yemen. It's also interesting to acknowledge that the Arab world's biggest mass demonstrations during the Arab Spring in 2011 happened in Sana'a, the capital of Yemen, with 100,000 participating in a sit-in to demand that the president, Saleh, step down. And then there were 10 months of street protests that were organized by students and opposition parties and later by military leaders who defected against them. And this was followed by violent crackdowns by the government against these so-called pro-democracy demonstrators, which you could have called them at the time. Interestingly, the Western press called them pro-democracy demonstrators at the time. You never hear about that anymore. They're not pro-democracy demonstrators now. But, you know, there was a
similar situation to Bahrain.
Yeah, exactly. And there was a UN report that was published that said that the Yemen government, which was headed by these U.S. puppets, had used excessive and deadly force against peaceful demonstrators, that they'd killed hundreds, that they'd wounded thousands. Mm-hmm. And so what happened? I mean, what happened is the United States said, well, it's obvious our guy in Sana'a has lost legitimacy. He's not going to last much longer, so he needs to step down, and he needs to be replaced, and we should replace him by his longtime aide, Hadi.
Yes, and they had an election where the only name on the ballot was Hadi.
Yes, and there was no option to vote no.
And America was very happy with that. You know, it really, I mean, bringing it into our context, I mean, Mr. James Bissett, former Canadian ambassador to Yugoslavia, Albania, and Bulgaria, wrote a piece in Toronto Star. I don't know if you saw it. It might have been in the Ottawa Citizen, that why bombing Syria breaks the law. His point is that, by the way, did you happen to see that piece? Are you aware of Mr. Bissett's take on this?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, but he's raising the old issue of tapping General Harper on the shoulder and saying, you know, there is international law, and there for very good reason that if we engage in these adventures, and at the moment, Canada would be endorsing the attack on Yemen. They certainly say they're going to go after Syria. It isn't a small thing, particularly now that Russia isn't any longer going along with matters, to say, oh, well, international law counts for nothing. He's asking that they read the rules at the UN Charter, et cetera. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, I know that the Canadian government just laughed at that and dismissed it with contempt and said, well, you know, we're just following the same argument, legal argument, that the United States is following. Yeah, so there ought to be international law, and there ought to be adherence to international law, but there certainly isn't.
Mm-hmm.
Why not? Because you can get away with violating it.
I wonder what, you know, what we could project here. I mean, it looks like maybe somebody's going to really slip up badly in either Saudi Arabia, Yemen, and some damage be done to these people who are initiating the violence. And a figure in this, I'd like your comment on, is I noticed that when they had the meeting, the Arab League in Sharm el-Sheikh, that Ban Ki-moon was there. And the United Nations didn't sanction any of the didn't sanction the meeting. It didn't sanction the assault on Yemen. So talk about the role of Ban Ki-moon. Why in the devil is he there?
Oh, well. Yes, indeed. Why?
It doesn't it? I mean, there's something about the optics. I mean, who told him to fly down there and give a speech meaning nothing, since he's not authorized by Security Council to take a stand? And they're not saying that Chapter 7 is involved or that there's any right to assault Yemen. Why is he there?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying you sent him.
And why is Saudi Arabia in Yemen?
Yeah.
One thing that I want to point out, in a lot of the media coverage, and all of the media coverage I've seen, no one is addressing the question of what the Houthis want.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that's the really interesting question. They're trying to make it seem as if there's some kind of sectarian war struggle going on, and this is a problem.
Shias, yes.
Saudi Arabia and Iran. But no one's asking, well, exactly what is it that they want? And you can do some searching for that, and you can find out what they want. I mean, they're quite open about what they want. And what they want is what most people in Yemen want. They say they want government accountability, end of corruption, regular utilities, fair fuel prices, job opportunities. And above all, they want the end of Western interference in their country. And many...
Something Canadians should identify with.
Yes, they should. I mean, they want to push out Western influence and decision-making. Mm-hmm. And they blame the United States and Saudi Arabia for allowing the former President Saleh to avoid prosecution for crimes against his people during the Arab Spring uprising.
Mm-hmm. Well, and by the way, and we ought to underline, this is not a small movement. This is one with substantial backing.
It is.
The Houthi-led fighting group.
It is, and there's the Houthi-led fighting group, and they have the support of many Yemenis who aren't Houthis as well.
Yeah, the attempt to make it sectarian, I just was speaking to Zafar Benghazi about this. I assume you agree that this is a political crisis. This is not about sectarian interests.
No, the Saudis are trying to use sectarianism to mobilize support against the Houthis because they are an offshoot of Shia Islam. But, I mean, the Houthis are not sectarian. Yeah. And they downplay the sectarianism. It's not a sectarian issue at all.
You know what, I hope maybe we could find you, be able to locate a long interview with a Houthi leader and... We could all read that. The press is not letting us see the arguments that you just laid out, that they've made. So we thank you for reproducing that interview with Assad. And, of course, thank you very much, Stephen Gowans, for being with us today. I apologize that we got to you late.
No problem. Thank you very much.
Okay. Bye-bye. Stephen Gowans, gowans.wordpress.com. This has been the Taylor Report. Write to us, taylor@cit.fm, and we will, Lucas, thanks very much. We'll see you next week.